We are joined now by Greg Barnes. He's the editor of Carolina Blue. You can follow him on Twitter at GSBarnes23. Inside Carolina's beat writer from 2007 to 2022, co-host of The Next Level Show. You can find his articles as well at 247sports.com. Again, that's 247sports.com. Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Michelle.
Absolutely. So we figured that it's great to play the UNC fight song. I'm a Carolina mom and a Michigan State grad, so I love the fact that UNC is starting the season with an ACC Big Ten matchup against Minnesota. You just dropped a great story about UNC's opportunity to reverse past trends, talking about some of the signature victories that have really have evaded the Mac Brown 2.0 run at UNC. Tell our listeners a little bit about the article and kind of what you're seeing and what you addressed.
Well, kind of the key point is that in North Carolina, even just the last 2 years, have won 9 and 8 games respectively. And yet the fan base is not quite satisfied. And so there's kind of this dichotomy of Carolina having success and yet the fans wanting more. And really the reason for that is because UNC schedules, by and large, have been weak, which have set them up to have success. And then when you really start looking at what's transpired the last 3 years, UNC's been doing pretty well up until about November. And then there's just the free fall. You know, 2 years ago, they lost their last 4 games to FBS opponents to close out the year. Last year, it was 4 or 5. And so just kind of there's a bad taste there. And then when you look at, okay, how good are some of these wins that Carolina has? Well, when you look at some of the advanced metrics, Carolina's 0-8 during the Mack Brown 2.0 era against teams that are top 20 in those metrics. And so there just haven't really been big wins. And so you add in the fact that, hey, your North Carolina is 10-7 in games in which they are double-digit favorites. That's not really good. So they're losing games they shouldn't lose. They're not really securing those big wins. But because the schedules have been relatively weak, they've been able to win, you know, 7, 8, 9 games consistently. And that's just where some of the challenges for Mack Brown to kind of beat that narrative and surpass some of those expectations.
Well, and even looking back last year, you know, that the start the season with that App State win, which could have easily gone the other way, a game that they should have handily won. So there's some at the beginning and some at the end. It's really interesting to watch. But do you think, as you look at the fan base and you write about it and you talk about it, that at a school like the University of North Carolina, where the expectation for the basketball team is a national championship, the expectation for the baseball team is so high, the expectation at every level, I mean, the statistics around each graduating class and the number of national championships that they each can brag about across every sport. UNC's always in the conversation. Women's field hockey, women's soccer, the list just goes on and on and on. At a school like the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, is the line so high from the fan base for every sport that, you know, an 8-win season just won't cut it in football at the University of North Carolina?
Yeah, if you remember back, Dean Smith used to say that North Carolina was a women's soccer school, just the amount of success that the Nance Endurance had. I think it's a good question, and I think you highlight something important there, and that's that North Carolina athletics for a long, long time has really sought out excellence across the board, and more often than not, they've been able to hit that mark. Where they have not has been on the football field. And there's a lot of deep history there. You know, Mack Brown has told the story about if you go back to when he left for Texas, all he was looking for from Carolina was to match Bill Guthridge's salary. Bill Guthridge was a first-year head coach at the time. Mack had had 2, you know, top 10 teams back-to-back. And it was a challenge getting a salary increase to match Bill Guthridge. And so there was always this kind of mindset of, well, Carolina basketball is Carolina basketball, and football can kind of have the scraps. Now, that's changed. You know, that's been a long time ago, and Bubba Cunningham and a lot of the boosters have done a really good job of elevating the football program. Mack Brown has played a big role in that as well now that he's returned. And they're trying to get to that point where 8 wins is not necessarily a good year. It's kind of the expectation. A good year is going to be 9, 10, even more wins. But there's a process involved. And so I think Mac's trying to toe that line of, look, you know, we're doing a lot better than we did when I got here. We still have further to go. And there's just a little bit of a headbutting going on with the fan base in terms of what the expectation actually is right now.
Absolutely. We're talking with Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina football and basketball analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at GSBarnes23. Don't forget to tune in right here to WPTF tomorrow night, 6 o'clock pregame, 8 p.m. kickoff, the University of North Carolina Tar Heels against the Minnesota Gophers. You know, it's really interesting because some of those losses on the football field were ugly. I mean, and that's the part for a fan base. And let's face it, I love college football. We're entering into heaven for me right now. I absolutely love this. But when there's an ugly loss, that is a way for your fan base to get really angry really quickly.
For sure, especially when you start out seasons 6-0 and 9-1, like Carolina has done the last 2 years.
Right.
And then you kind of stumble against a bad Georgia Tech team or a bad Virginia team. And that's really the next step, I think, for Mac Brown in this program. Yes, you want to have those signature wins. You want to upset Clemson on the road or this year Florida State on the road. But that's kind of cherry on top, if you will. You just got to make sure that you're beating the teams you're supposed to be beating. And that's where, you know, to your point, they've kind of struggled in recent years. And I think they know that, and this is the deepest team and probably the most balanced roster that Mac Brown has had since he returned. And they think that even though they don't have Drake May, they've got enough pieces across the board to be able to elevate the play and kind of elevate that floor, if you will.
Absolutely. Well, and their neighbors in Raleigh, the NC State Wolfpack, they've lost to them the last 2 years. That can really upset the UNC fan base for sure. But they're watching, watching the Wolfpack do incredibly well across many sports fronts. You know, obviously there's always the huge competition with Duke. That football program has elevated over the course of the last decade. That used to be, you know, if Duke got one or two wins in the ACC during football season, that was, you know, kind of monumental. Now you see them become more competitive, and you're starting to see some parity across UNC and all college football, but definitely seeing when you lose to who you consider the little brother over here in Raleigh, that's a tough one for UNC fans to swallow.
For sure. And, you know, State has done a really good job over the years, and Dave Dorn especially, in making that Carolina game so important as a rivalry game. John Bunning did it when he was head coach of Carolina. He had a lot of success. He was 4-2 against the Pack. And so it is. It's embracing that rivalry. And I will say this. I think there's some praise deserved for both Carolina and State, because over the past 5 years, those teams are tied for the most wins in ACC play, only behind Clemson. So I think both coaching staffs and both programs have done a really good job elevating their programs. That makes these games even more important.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget about some of the other pressures that are going to be felt by ACC coaches. Florida State, after that surprising loss to Georgia Tech in week 0 in Ireland, you know, how do they respond? I think there's a lot of pressure on Dabo Swinney to have a national championship type year at Clemson, because that fan base won't take another year of what they've had in the past. So the expectations within the ACC, and with the ACC growing this year, I think that you're going to see, do you agree, pressure really on everyone to be able to deliver?
For sure. And, you know, the Big Ten's expanded, the SEC has expanded. They're really kind of the power two conferences right now. And so the ACC needs a solid year across the board. And yes, you would like to see a Florida State or a Clemson push for a, you know, college football playoff. And I guess, you know, NC State and a few other teams are in the mix. But you want to have a very good season by a lot of different teams. You know, the rising tide lifts all boats mantra. You don't want to have these teams having some bad losses. I don't know that Florida State's loss to Georgia Tech is necessarily a bad loss, but you don't want many of those. And so the more top-line teams in the ACC that can have good years, that's going to help to combat that Big Ten, SEC narrative that they've just completely pulled away from everybody else.
Absolutely. We're talking with Greg Barnes. You can follow him on Twitter at GSBarnes23. Again, GSBarnes23. A couple questions specifically about the game tomorrow. Who's going to be the starting quarterback for the University of North Carolina tomorrow night against Minnesota?
Looks like it's going to be Max Johnson, the Texas A&M transfer. Connor Harrell was a young guy who played in the bowl game last year against West Virginia. He's still coming along. They think he has a lot of potential. But Max Johnson, he's played and he started more than 20 games in the SEC. He's had some ups and downs. He's had some injury issues. But he's pretty solid. He's not Drake May. But they think he's going to be able to give them a chance to win a lot of these games.
Absolutely. Again, we're talking with Greg Barnes, inside Carolina football and basketball analyst. Follow him on Twitter, GSBarnes23, GSBarnes23. You wrote a great piece about NIL and its impact with UNC baseball in particular. And you can find Greg's pieces not only on his Twitter, but you can also visit 247sports.com. Again, 247sports.com. The impact of NIL, specifically in UNC baseball, was your piece. Let's talk a little bit about that and kind of how you see NIL, the transfer portal. There have been a lot of changes, I think, that have really impacted college sports over the course of just the last 5 years. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And I really think that the biggest issue for programs moving forward is going to be the portal, just because now you've got it set up where kids can transfer pretty much every year if they want to. And it's difficult to maintain development and those types of things. NIL, as shocking as it was initially, and probably still is for a lot of people, I think what you're going to see, and this is kind of what I highlighted in the baseball article, is that what a lot of schools are going to be doing is instead of this being something where these kids are getting new cars and maybe boats, and Caleb Williams at USC had a penthouse that he had in downtown L.A., those are the extremes. For baseball, you're going to see kids that only have a partial scholarship all of a sudden have money to cover their tuition. So instead of leaving school with debt after playing baseball for 4 years at Carolina, they can have that debt covered. That's very important for what these kids want to do, and that's for the large majority of student-athletes across the country. And that's the importance of these NIL programs. It's really going to be designed as scholarship support. And then you also get some branding involved with that as well. So I think there's potential for that to become a good thing, even though initially it is kind of shocking and completely different than what we've seen with amateur sports.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch because I don't know that I will have to say, kind of as a purist, I didn't like the idea, although it was sickening to me that you had kids that the university was making, millions of dollars off of their jerseys or their likeness, and they couldn't buy a pizza. So I get it. I understand that it needed to transition. Jay Billis is probably the one who won me over in the whole story. But to see a gymnast from LSU is really the top NIL. You're seeing it across sports, and that's why I loved your story so much hitting baseball, because I think when this kind of first came to the forefront and we knew this was going to move forward, I think many of us were thinking this is going to kind of make the rich richer, right? This is going to really only hit the big male-dominated sports. But you're seeing it now, I think, in some of those other sports where there aren't full-ride scholarships, where kids are maybe have a partial scholarship, and this is an opportunity to support that scholarship and make sure that those kids can leave not only with a degree but without any student debt.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the expansion of streaming services and especially social media has really helped in that regard. You mentioned the lady at LSU. I mean, look at her social media presence. You look at a lot of the U.S. Olympic team members and their social media presence. That's an incredible thing. Caitlin Clark at Iowa. The women's Final Four had more viewers than the men's Final Four. And that's driven by her success, but also because of social media and getting those names out there, especially the young people these days who are on social media all the time. So I think that's really helped to fuel this, whereas 30 years ago, you only had very select things on TV. And to your point, that was primarily men's sports, especially football and basketball.
Yep, absolutely. We're talking with Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina football and basketball analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at GSBarnes23, GSBarnes23. Don't forget to tune in here to WPTF 6 o'clock tomorrow night for pregame, 8 p.m. kickoff, the University of North Carolina Tar Heels against the Minnesota Gophers. What are you expecting to see on the field tomorrow?
I think with the chance of there being rain, I mean, last I saw, there's about an 80% chance. And then you factor in Minnesota is going to play traditional Big Ten ball, and Carolina with Marion Hampton will probably want to do the same. I think this is going to be a very physical, low-scoring game. I'd be surprised if either team scores more than 24 points or so. With Darius Taylor, who's Minnesota's top player at running back, he seems to be doubtful, kind of a game-time decision. If he does not play, I think you're going to have to go with North Carolina. If he is able to play and be productive, which he was last year against Carolina, I think the Tar Heels are going to have a tough time escaping Minneapolis with a victory.
Well, and to your point, we talk about kind of the dominance of the Big Ten and SEC in college football over the course of the last few years. It's going to be so important with the expanded ACC, with the expanded Big Ten, to make sure that everyone's getting good wins, because come bowl selection time, you don't want to have a bad loss.
For sure, and especially for North Carolina, when you look at the rest of their schedule, they got North Carolina Central, they've got James Madison. Charlotte's not expected to be very good at all this year. So if you don't win the Minnesota game, you're not gaining anything else from those non-conference games. You pretty much have to run the table in the ACC to get a lot of attention and some respect as you get late in the season and you start having those conversations.
Absolutely. Again, we're talking with Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina football and basketball analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at GSBarnes23, GSBarnes23. Tune in tomorrow, 6 o'clock pregame right here on WPTF, 8 o'clock kickoff for the University of North Carolina Tar Heels against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Of course, as a Big Ten girl and a UNC mom, I'm going to absolutely be cheering on the Tar Heels tomorrow night. It's interesting as we talk about this, the NIL article that you did around baseball. You talked about two key issues going into college sports right now, NIL and the transfer portal. It's interesting when you see longtime coaches, Hall of Famers, legacy coaches like Nick Saban and others that haven't really been able to make the transition to the portal. It's been just really difficult, and you're seeing, even college basketball. I mean, my Michigan State coach, Tom Izzo, it's been a struggle for him to kind of catch up. You look at somebody like Mac Brown. I mean, he's in his 70s. I think he's got to be the oldest active coach in ACC football at this time, maybe in all of football, and all of it. Yeah. Do you see an impact, kind of a generational impact of those old school coaches that kind of, those were the glory days of how it was done before? But NIL and the transfer portal are massive game changers when you look at college sports. Do you think that's having an impact on somebody like a Mac Brown, a Nick Saban, or a Rick Pitino, others that are kind of that old school college sports?
For sure. And you look at, you mentioned Saban, but also look at Roy Williams. Roy Williams did not want to have to deal with the changing world of college basketball. And that was a leading force in why he decided to retire when he did. I think you have to give Mac a lot of credit because, Dabo Swinney is not near Mac's age, and he's had a really difficult time bringing himself along to be able to go into the portal. They just haven't used the portal at all, and I think it's hurt him a little bit. But Mac has always been progressive thinking and how to approach things. I think his time at ESPN, where he spent 5 years as an analyst, really helped him because he spoke with a lot of young coaches and kind of understood what was going on behind the scenes. And so he's been very open and willing to go into the portal and to use that as a second avenue for recruiting. The old school guys just want to get kids out of the high school ranks, coach them up over a couple of years, and then rely on them. Mac understands that's no longer the case. There's different ways to skin a cat. And part of that is being able to go into the portal and say, okay, we have these needs. Who's somebody that we can trust in terms of development, those types of things, and bring them in? And what you're seeing where Carolina's had some success is they're going to a program like Georgia, where Austin Blaski's the center for Carolina now. Well, he was a backup at Georgia the last couple of years. And so he's a kid that you know has gotten good coaching. He was a good prospect coming out of high school. He just wasn't able to get on the field at Georgia. And so North Carolina is going to be able to benefit in that regard. So I think you have to give Mack a lot of credit. At 73 and as the oldest coach in the FBS, he's been nimble on his feet.
That's great. And you know, there, you see coaches using the NIL prospects within their university and the programs that they have as a recruitment tool, not only as they're recruiting kids out of high school, but as they're recruiting kids out of the portal as well.
For sure. And that, the key thing with NIL is when it first came out a couple years ago, there was really no rules. It was like you can't be pay for play. You can't entice a player to come from a different school. And that was pretty much it. Now they've gotten to the point where there's contracts in place. The university can help a little bit. There are buyouts as part of those contracts. So when a kid's in the portal, you can actually go to him and say, hey, this is the NIL offer that we have. If you sign it, then you agree to come to Carolina for 1 year, 2 years, whatever it may be. If you decide to leave, this is what it's going to cost you. So it's much more streamlined than it used to be. It used to be, kind of the Wild West. They said it was NFL free agency without contracts. That's no longer the case. And so they've streamlined it a lot now, and it's a little bit easier. But they are able to do that negotiation before the kid ever steps on campus.
There we go. Greg Barnes, thank you so much for joining us. Inside Carolina football and basketball analyst. Follow him on Twitter at GSBarnes23. Hopefully have you back on the show to talk through college football and all kinds of other things that are happening with the University of North Carolina Tar Heels. Don't forget to tune in here 6 o'clock tomorrow night, WPTF, for pregame, 8 p.m. kickoff, University of North Carolina Tar Heels against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Michelle.
Absolutely.